May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. In 2009, this court ordered all circuits that had not already done so to consolidate their appointing authorities over all deputy and division clerks. At that point in time, at least two-thirds of the state had already done so, or at least two-thirds of the state's circuits had already done so. Today, all 115 circuit courts in this state have consolidation agreements in place. The question presented to this court here today is whether any of those consolidation agreements are lawful.
Considering that this agreement, that the original agreement in this circuit to consolidate predated the 2009 order, what is there in the 2009 order that has any legal effect?
Well, clearly that order mandated other unconsolidated circuits to consolidate, but it also clearly contemplated putting all circuits on the same footing.
Well, is there any language in that order that would allow a circuit to renegotiate its original consolidation agreement?
Not in the order, Your Honor, but in the original 2008 order, we can go back to that, or agreement rather, I'm sorry, Your Honor, in Adair County, provided by its own terms that that agreement could be, if there was a disagreement, it could be modified by the en banc court, in the circuit, that is. Clearly, the order from this court was it told the circuits what lawful consolidation was. It commended the circuits that had already done so. It said who the appointing authorities could be, that it would be submitted to the Circuit Court Budget Committee for approval, and that is exactly what happened in this case. The 2013 amendment, which Judge Omer, in his letter to Judge Steele, it said regarding the amendment to the 2008 or the Adair County agreement. So the Circuit Court Budget Committee knew that this was an amendment. And in fact, in 2014, when they amended again, this court or in the Circuit Court Budget Committee minutes, there was a note in there that said that the Supreme Court recommends review and approval of the 2014 order, which named not Judge Steele, but Judge Swaim as the appointing authority. But all of this turns back to this court's order and the statute. And
prior to this court's order, there was a distinction between deputy clerks and division clerks. Who supervised deputy clerks?
Prior to this order, there were consolidation agreements already in place. Several counties or circuits already had named, prior to this court's order, there were several circuits that had named associate circuit judges, but by and large, the answer to that question is that the elected circuit clerk was the appointing authority, and there was obviously a statute in place, but this court was facilitating consolidation prior to that, Your Honor.
Prior to consolidation, the associate circuit judge had supervising responsibility over the deputy clerks, and the circuit clerks had authority over the division clerks, correct?
It's the reverse, I think,
okay.
Your Honor.
The
elected circuit clerk had appointing authority over the deputy clerks, and the respective associate circuit judges had the authority, appointing authority, to name their respective clerks.
Is there anything that would prohibit the circuit clerk and the associate circuit judge from entering into an agreement regarding supervision?
That is what happened in 2008 in Adair County. That question is not before this court, whether or not somebody perhaps could waive their vested authority if it was vested by statute. I think you would still face the problem because many of these counties have many associate circuit judges, and they turn over from time to time. So I think either the statute controls or this court's order controls, and that's the real question before this court. And even before that order, guidance from this court as to consolidation, I think that superseded the statute, certainly did, based on the inherent authority of this court. Because in the Constitution, Chief Justice Price cited Article 5, Section 4 at the outset of that order, which we spent time in the briefs on the first paragraph, but there's actually three paragraphs to that section. The first paragraph provides for superintending control and supervisory authority over all courts which may be delegated. But then in paragraph 2 of Article 5, Section 4, it states, the Supreme Court may appoint a state court's administrator and other staff to aid in the administration of the courts. So that is the express authority within the Constitution, not only to supervise, which the plain meaning of that would mean the ability to administer the courts or to delegate hiring and firing authority, but it actually specifically states that the Supreme Court may appoint staff to aid in the administration of the courts. Respondents, Ms. Gall and Decker, they've argued in their brief that my client, Judge Steele, is asking this court to nullify RISMO 483245. The court already did nullify that in the 2009 order regarding consolidation. There's no question that consolidation is in conflict with the statute. The statute provides for two separate appointing authorities, the circuit clerk for deputy clerks and the associate circuit judges for their respective clerks. And neither the trial court nor the court of appeals addressed this inconsistency, namely that the associate circuit judges under their reading would be stripped of their appointing authority, which is vested in the statute. And furthermore, the trial court, he reasoned that this court's order could only apply to circuits with non-elected clerks that had not already consolidated. And that is such a hyper-technical reading of the order that, by my count, it would have applied to no more than three circuits in the state at that time.
Is our understanding of the breadth of the Chief Justice Price's order assisted by the last paragraph, which says, if a court has submitted a plan to the Circuit Court Budget Committee prior to October 1, 2009, and it has been approved, it shall be deemed in compliance with the consolidation requirements under this order. And the order was issued on October 8, 2009. So if it was not intended to cover previously consolidated courts, would there have been any purpose to that final paragraph?
My answer, Judge Stith, is that that did make it apply to everybody. It was effectively grandfathering all of the other consolidation agreements, and that would bring up the next question, which is, could they modify it? And that was further clarified. It was about a month after, because the Adair County modified, I believe it was in May of 2013, and about a month later, Judge Teitelman's order saying that this is how you modify it, essentially, under the same rules. But
can
clearly,
you address the constitutional argument in the, as provided by law and what that refers to, that you all disagree as to whether that refers to this court's authority under the Constitution, superintending authority, or it just refers to statutory authority?
Yes, Judge. And we do disagree on that. In Juan v. Reorganized School District, we both cite that case, and we both rely on that case. And there is two parts to the sentence in that case. It says, as provided by law is statutory law, but it's also other provisions of the Constitution. And that turns back to what Judge or Chief Justice Price stated at the outset of the order, the other provision of the Constitution, which was Article 5, Section 4, which provides this court the authority to administer all of the courts of this state. So as provided by law means, and it can mean many things. I mean, it certainly it means statutory law, but there are other types of law. I don't think anyone would argue that there is decisional law that comes down from this court. I think in this case, this would be more analogous to statutory law because it's an inherent power that is provided by the Constitution that this court administers or has supervisory authority.
So what you're saying it's pursuant, as the order said, pursuant to this court's authority under the Constitution to exercise superintending control and authority over the lower courts. You all disagree as to what's inherent in those words and what those words mean. Can you explain to us what you think they mean, why they give the courts authority to issue this order?
Well, I think just the plain meaning of superintending, and we cite some of that, and I can't quote it all off the top of my head, but we go straight to the dictionary, superintending control and supervisory control or superintending authority. The plain meaning of that is to administer, and an administer is to the ability to hire and fire. And again, I would go to the second paragraph in the constitutional section, which specifically states that this court may appoint staff to administer the courts. So we would go to the plain meaning of the words, that superintending authority gives this court authority to say there will be one appointing authority. That appointing authority may be the elected circuit clerk or an associate circuit judge in the circuit or the presiding judge.
Thank you.
I want to go back to your point earlier about the fact that the court's order nullified the 483 statute. You cite in the brief the 20th Judicial Circuit versus Franklin County. In that case, it was a different set of facts, but this court said the circuit clerk is mere agent of the court, and therefore that the clerk could still exercise their statutory authority, but under the supervision of the court. So could the order and the statute coexist?
I don't think so, Judge. And I don't think they can coexist because the statute, and this is our problem with the trial court and the Court of Appeals, is that they read half of the statute, which vests authority in the elected circuit clerk. But they don't read the other half, or they don't address the other half, rather, that provides the appointing authority with the associate circuit judges. So I don't think consolidation can ever exist. Even in the counties with unelected clerks, you still have the issue of multiple associate, many of those counties are bigger counties that don't have elected clerks, so you have many associate circuit judges. So anytime you're going to have one appointing authority, and in some cases, some of the circuits have panels. So in some of those cases, you do have, so perhaps in some of those limited instances, it could coexist where you have both the elected circuit clerk and associate circuit judges on a panel as the appointing authority. But there are only a few circuits, I believe, and it's in the record in the spreadsheet from OSCA, but I believe there are only a few circuits that have that situation, Judge. And my time is up, so I will.
We have to start with Article 5, Section 15.4, which has a commandment that says personnel necessary for the business of the court shall be selected as provided by law. As provided by law, everybody understands at least at its bare minimum includes or means the legislature. That is the only function of the legislature, is to provide by law.
I don't think anybody doubts the legislature can act in this area, but the question is, can the court also act as provided by law?
That's true. So that's the next step. But the big piece that the appellant is missing is Article 2, Section 1, which is the separation of powers article. And it's divided into three sections, and each section is worth considering. That the powers of the government shall be divided into three distinct departments, legislative, executive, and judicial, each of which shall be confided to separate magistracy, and no person shall exercise any power properly belonging to either of the others, except in the instances in this Constitution expressly directed. And that is the fatal flaw at the heart of appellant's argument here. They depend on the Wan case, and what Wan says is everybody understands that provided by law, when used in the Constitution, has been held to mean as prescribed or provided by statute. And then as an aside, it says that could also refer to other provisions of the Constitution. Now, appellant takes that as meaning any mention of any power in the Constitution, but that's not true, because when you go back to Article 2, Section 1, it says that in order to exercise the power that doesn't belong to your branch of government, in other words, in order for the judiciary to exercise the power to make law, there has to be an express directive in the Constitution
allowing that.
And counsel, as I know you know, their argument is that there is an express direction in the Constitution.
Yes.
And it's that the Supreme Court shall have general superintendent control over all courts and tribunals, and supervisory authority over all courts is vested in the Supreme Court, and that the court may appoint a court administrator and other staff to aid in the administration of the
but
court.
But that is not an express direction that they have the right to make law. Provide by
no,
law.
No, it's they're saying they have a right to direct and supervise staff and appoint
they have
staff.
The right to, they have the right to make administrative directions. Yes, I don't disagree with that. But that does not provide them with the right to provide by law, because Judge Simeon, when he wrote the revision to the judicial article in 1976, he understood what was going on here, and he provided specific provision of the Constitution, Article 5, Section 5, Article 5, which provides specific authority for the judicial branch to make law in three different areas, that is, pleading, practice, and procedure. So the fact that the Constitution itself, in Article 5, Section 5, delineates three specific areas in which the court is expressly directed to make law.
So could the legislature pass a statute that took away the court supervisory authority and superintending authority under your interpretation? If they made that law, would the courts then not be able to supervise their staff?
They can't, because that would conflict with the specific directive of the...
So what we really come down to is what's the meaning of supervisory authority and superintending control, since they can't take that away, since the Constitution...
No, I disagree, control. Judge. I think that it's much more specific than that, because there is a specific exception to the general rule. The general rule is you have the judiciary has general supervisory authority, but there's a specific exception to that. And as I don't think there's any disagreement that when you have a specific exception to a general rule, the specific outweighs the generality. And the specific exception here is with respect to personnel necessary to aid in the business of the court.
Well, let me ask you a question about that then. Assume that the legislature didn't appropriate sufficient monies to pay every single clerk currently employed. Who in the end would have the authority to decide where the money goes?
I don't recall.
Do the circuit clerks get to?
I don't recall the name of the case you're referring to, but that is a case from the 1930s or 1940s in which the court retains, the judiciary retains inherent powers necessary for the survival of the judicial branch. So, for instance, I think the case was about provision of a court building or facilities for the court to hold court. And while the legislature was supposed to provide, their failure to provide the court allowed the court itself to appropriate the monies until the legislature would come up with the money, because that was a danger to the survival of the judicial branch itself. In this particular case, we don't have any dire need. We don't have any. We have some possibilities, some vague possibilities. But this has been the way it's been for 100 years. The circuit clerk has been elected in most counties in the state of Missouri for almost 100 years, and the statute also goes on to provide that the circuit clerk shall have the authority to appoint and control the activities of their deputy circuit clerks. And that was tested in the Lasky case in 1970, which is prior to the revision of the judicial article. So in other words, Judge Simeon had to have taken that into account when he was.
Can the statute modify the Constitution?
The statute cannot modify the Constitution, no ma'am. But when there is a conflict between the judicial branch attempting to make law and the legislature attempting to make law, when they both have concurrent authority, which is the case in Article 5, Section 5, pleading practice and procedure, then the judicial branch trumps. The judicial branch supersedes the authority of the legislature to provide by law.
So, excuse me, counsel, there's a question.
Yes, excuse me. So then are you agreeing with your opponent's argument that that Section 483.245 was nullified by the 2009 order?
Yes, because the judicial branch has no authority. There is no concurrent jurisdiction to make law. It's not a question of supervisory. I don't buy this argument about the supervisor has the power to make law. The supervisor of the school district doesn't have the power to make law. They enforce law. It's the school board who makes the law. So the fact that there is superintending or supervisory
and
power.
And why is issuing an order organizing the duties of Supreme Court staff making law as opposed to exercising supervisory and superintending authority?
I think that's a red herring because that part of the Constitution is talking about the staff, the statewide staff, the OSCA and the staff back here in Jeff City.
What about?
Although it's unclear. I will say, but what's very clear is the provision of 15.4, and there's no way around it. It says the ability to the choice of personnel to aid in the business of the court shall be selected as provided by law in this case and under Juan means. Statute, unless there is a specific exception created in the Constitution. Now, the appellant's reliance on Clark versus Kinsey is a perfect example of this situation, and it's also a perfect example that the appellant doesn't understand the situation here. In Clark versus Kinsey, they quote a section that says that because the judicial branch made a rule and it conflicts with the state statute, the judicial branch wins. Well, the only reason for that is because that was one of the three topics under Article 5, Section 5 that the Supreme Court has, or that the judicial branch has, the express authority and directive to make laws or to make rules that have the force and effect of law. In this particular case, the judicial branch does not have the express authority or directive of the Constitution to make laws that have the force and effect of law.
Is it your view that, I understand you're representing the circuit clerk here, but is it your view that every associate circuit judge who had control over two division clerks could make this same argument, could go to court, file a declaratory judgment action saying, my predecessor associate circuit judge didn't have the authority to enter into a consolidation agreement that I can't supervise two people in my office?
Well,
what's the difference?
Well, the division clerk is a different kind of clerk than
there were clerks prior to consolidation. There were clerks who were supervised by the circuit clerk. And there were clerks who were associated, who were supervised by associate circuit judges, both having statutory authority to do it. So what I'm trying to figure out is how far your argument goes. Is it you just believe in the circuit clerk statute, or you believe there's associate circuit judges out there who wouldn't be bound by consolidation agreements either, and that they could go then peel out clerks that may be under the authority of the circuit clerk? And would we have to figure out who these people really were at some point in time to figure out who their appropriate statutory supervisor would be today?
It does seem, although this is a decision in a case for another day and another argument, but it does seem that looking at 15.4 and all the provisions of 15.4, that it points different directions for different kinds of clerks, which would make it difficult or impossible in many situations to consolidate power into one individual, one appointing authority, and that I don't read that as a fault with the consolidation order. I read that as a direction of the Constitution that maybe consolidation is not such a good idea. We want the Constitution controls. And when the Constitution says that we give the legislature the power to determine how personnel selected shall be retained, but we're giving the division clerk appointing authority to the associate circuit court judges, that's just another way of saying we don't want that. We want to specify who the appointing authority is. We don't want the consolidation. The drafters, Judge Simeon and his team back in 1976, didn't want the consolidation. But let me just say in closing.
Do you think they anticipated the fact that that might result in a judge having a division with no staff person for which to receive filings?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Do you think Judge Simeon envisioned that that would result in a probate division somewhere where there was no clerk available to receive filings?
No, not at all. I don't think, if anything, what Judge Simeon didn't anticipate was an order attempting to consolidate all of the power into one office.
Or maybe not the money to fund both division clerks and deputy clerks.
Perhaps.
And couldn't then our supervisory authority then be able to say, hey, if we're not getting enough money to pay both division and deputy clerks, then we've got to do something to keep our courthouses open?
Well, I don't have a problem with there being supervisory authority. I am not attacking supervisory authority. I'm not even attacking the consolidation order here. I think on a county-by-county basis, as the Western District pointed out, the Constitution can, and the statute can be complied with. The different counties have different appropriate appointing authorities. And in this particular case, prior to Judge Steele nominating himself and installing himself as the appointing authority over the direction, over the wishes of the statutory appointing authority, Linda Decker, everything was copacetic. Everything was in accordance with the Constitution. The only thing that caused a problem here was Judge Steele's usurpation of the power. It denuded her office of authority, and which I don't think he's got the authority to do under the Constitution. I see my time is up. If you don't have any further questions, thank you for listening today.
My colleague brought up Article 2, Section 1, separation of powers. I want to start there. This is a huge problem for separation of powers if the legislature is telling this court how to administer its courts. If the legislature has overriding authority to tell this court who the appointing authorities are going to be or whether consolidation can occur. And there's no, the statute cannot be complied with under consolidation, because there's always going to be somebody who is stripped of authority, except perhaps in these very narrow circumstances like I described, where you have, you know, a joint panel perhaps. But that is not what's happening in the state. Overwhelmingly, there's a single appointing authority vested in a single person in these various circuits. There are maybe a half dozen that do it by panel or by multiple persons. I want to bring up, he mentioned my client Judge Steele appointing himself. In the trial court, the trial judge mentioned that he had not consulted with the entire court in banc. That's clearly not true based on the emails, or he said that not everyone was in the email chain. If you look at the emails, all four judges in the circuit were CC'd in the email. The elected circuit clerk was CC'd as part of that email. Judge Steele got his own vote, and two of the other three judges approved the 2013 consolidation plan, which he then signed and submitted to the Circuit Court Budget Committee, which was then approved. And then, of course, which is also at issue in this case, is the 2014 order, which the court then met in banc and named Judge Swaim as the appointing authority, which, again, that was also approved by the Circuit Court Budget Committee. This is not the first time this has happened, in fact. And in St. Louis City Circuit, they had a dispute where the presiding judge submitted a plan from the judges, and at that time there was an elected circuit clerk, which changed in 2012. They now have an appointed clerk. But when this happened, this was in December of 2009, so after this court's order, the then elected circuit clerk wanted to be the appointing authority. The judges wanted the presiding judge to be the appointing authority. That was the Circuit Court Budget Committee ultimately approved the presiding judge's plan, or the judge's plan, which was then contested, and Senior Judge John Parrish held in that case, and it was just at the Cole County Trial Court level, that it was lawful pursuant to this court's order and pursuant to Article 5, Section 4 of the Constitution, which clearly gives this court the inherent authority to order consolidation. We would ask that you reverse the trial court and rule both the 2013 and 2014 orders in Adair County or agreements as lawful. Thank you.
Thank you.